Hi, everybody. Welcome to the webinar this evening. Today is Tuesday, September 6th, 2016. This is probably the oldest discussion that a therapist has, a wilderness therapist has with a family. And a couple of things really lead into that idea, that process. Number one is the number one most common complaint on our applications, no matter the age, the number one most common complaint from parents is school problems, school struggles. So already you're seeing that that's going to be the marker. That's going to be the indicator. A theme throughout tonight that I want to talk about is we want to let academic success inform us about how the child is doing, how the individual is doing, but we don't want it to be the entire picture. And we want to figure out, especially when we talk about mental health and addiction, we want to figure out where we put that in terms of our priority for right now. So that's going to be a theme for tonight. This is something that the therapist at Evoca has actually asked me to speak about, because it's a discussion that they have so often with their families. And it's often for a lot of families, a paradigm shift, something they need to shift in order to focus on first things first and focus on the priorities. I have a few, I think, fun quotes and ideas to lead out with, a concept about what's going on today. We live in a decaying age. Young people no longer respect their parents. They're rude and impatient. They frequently inhabit bars and have no self-control. What's happening to our young people? The next quote goes on. They disrespect their elders. They disobey their parents. They ignore the law. They riot in the streets and flame with wild notions. Their morals are decaying. What is to become of them? Third quote. The children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect to their elders. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chatter before company, and are tyrants over their teachers. And lastly, the young people of today think nothing but themselves. Think of nothing but themselves. They have no reverence for parents or old age. They are impatient of all restraint. They talk as if they alone knew everything, and what passes for wisdom with us is foolishness with them. As for girls, they are forward and modest and unwomanly in speech, behavior, and dress. And the reason I list this, of course, is to present the idea that sometimes the way we look at, the way our generation looks at the younger generation, whatever that generation of parents is, sometimes we have this idea to romanticize past times. I always say that I want to be the first generation of parents that can understand also a lot of the good that's going on in the world, a lot of the good that's happening with our children today. And I think sometimes we have a myopic vision, or we only remember the most recent history, and it's hard for us to see that. I have a couple more quotes like this that I think are fun. I see no hope for the future of our people if they depended on frivolous youth of today, for certainly all youth are reckless beyond words. When I was young, we were taught to be discreet and respectful of elders, but the present youth are exceedingly disrespectful and impatient of restraint. I see no hope for the future of our people if they're dependent. Oh, that's the same quote over again. So again, it's these ideas about looking back. I think this is a pretty interesting thing that I read when I was thinking about education and what's going on. What are the trends going on with children today? Conrad Gresser warned of information overload. This overabundance is confusing and harmful to the mind. He urged governments to regulate and limit the use. Niccolo Parodi, because now that anyone is free to post whatever they wish, they often disregard that which is best and instead write what would best be forgotten. And even when they write something worthwhile, they twist it and corrupt it to the point where it would be much better to do without such sights, rather than spreading foolish falsehoods all over the world. Now, this is a little bit of a take because they were actually talking about the printing press. And I changed a couple of words to make the point. But the point is that sometimes that we can look at what's going on with today and forget what it was like to be a child, forget what it was like to struggle, forget what it was like to kind of push the boundaries of the previous generation. And into more quotes around academics and learning, how we really do see an integral process. And a lot of what happens for our clients is they begin to fall in love with things like reading and studying and learning. If only that, if we can only light that fire in our clients and our students, I think we've accomplished something quite great. And quieting all the voices, quieting all the technology, getting away from screens, all the distractions, oftentimes that becomes the fertile ground in which this new passion or reconnection with learning grows, right? We see a lot of students reading several books while they're with us, and just beginning to learn something and seeing how it applies to their life is pretty profound. A mind once stressed by a new idea never regains its original dimensions. All who have meditated on the art of governing mankind have been convinced that the fate of empires depends on the education of youth. History is a race between education and catastrophe. Love that one. A teacher affects eternity. He can never tell where his influence stops. Very famous quote. The aim of education is to enable individuals to continue their education, and the object and reward of learning is continued capacity for growth. John Dewey. Only people who die very young will learn all they really need to know in kindergarten. I don't want to make this a political discussion, but I think when we look at what's going on in the world, I think one of the things that can improve a lot of our issues worldwide is more education. And I think one of the dangers that exists is this idea that you can arrive. You can arrive and knowing all there is to know. I tell this story symbolically more than literally because I wasn't around at the time, but it seems like from my best understanding, from my best guess of things, from the way that my uncles and my mother described them and how I knew them, my grandparents by the age of 30 knew everything there was to know in their minds. That very few new thoughts came into their minds. And I think that's so dangerous and limiting. And one of the things my therapist often says is she says, so many people die long before they're dead because there's nothing new about them, nothing new to learn in this process. So learning is a part of therapy, and therapy is a part of learning. For us at Evoke, I think it's a fundamental mistake of many wilderness programs to have the complaint, the most common complaint being school problems, because that's the marker, that's the indicator, that's the thing that informs us parents that something is going wrong with our children often. I think it's a mistake to remove that variable. If you don't have an academic curriculum, if you don't have writing assignments, reading assignments, science, English, you know, PE, we even have our clients and students learn about the exercise that they're doing. If you don't have some of that there, then you're really removing one of the greatest challenges of their life. And then you pat yourself on the back and say, look how successful and good we are at therapy. But we've just removed the one thing that was the strongest indicator at home of them having problems. So it's important that we have some curriculum. It's important that we have something in the field that mimics the academic classroom to some extent. Now, it's not going to be nearly as rigorous, right? We're going to prioritize therapy and clinical work, but we're not going to remove it totally, and we're going to have some of that. And I'll talk about that a little later. So the academic problems that come to us, that show up at our door, learning differences and the effects on behavior. Having a learning difference and struggling in school is one of the most powerful predictors of oppositional and defiant disorders and of substance use. And it makes sense, doesn't it? If you're struggling, you would much rather be known as somebody who gets in trouble. There's less shame in that among your peers than somebody who's not smart or can't get it, right? And that's often the misinterpretation of those who have learning differences is that they're not smart. And so instead of being known as that, I would rather be the troublemaker, the joker, the defiant one. And so that's why it's a huge predictor. Also for some learning differences like ADHD, and I won't go into learning differences in depth on this one. We have another webinar on that. But I will say that sometimes the medication, the substance use often is self-medicating and soothing for people with those kinds of disorders. So that can be one reason why it's a great predictor. There's an emotional response, frustration. There's also a self-confidence, right? Sometimes our overemphasis on academic success, not that that's not an important part of a full life for most adolescents and most young adults, but it's not everything. And sometimes esteem is about that, right? And so the self-doubt, the lack of confidence, it comes along with that. Just as a side note, it's important that I think that one of the things we hear a lot is how gifted are our clients and students. Our parents tell us that. And again, I won't go off track too far, but it's important that we learn to praise the effort instead of the giftedness. Praising somebody's giftedness, potential, which all of us have done at times, is one of the greatest ways to ruin them, according to the authors of the book, Nurture Shock, right? Because what happens is if you're praised for your giftedness or for your potential or for your being smart, you have nowhere to go but down. And you'd rather fail and not try than try and get a B+. Because the B+ would confirm to everybody that you're not special, that you're not really bright, that you're just kind of good, kind of smart. So that's a little side note. There's confusion, of course, of what's going on, especially with some of the learning differences, because so many people with learning differences are so bright and have such high IQs, but because they learn and see things differently and have a different way of processing information, of acquiring information, it can be very confusing to them. The anger and resentment, the sadness, the feelings that come up, all of those feelings come. The learned helplessness is that idea inherent in depression, which is no matter how hard I try, I can't make a difference. So having academic difficulties because of a learning difference, it's going to be confusing to you. And even when you put in more effort, right? Somebody with dyslexia, if they just try harder to read without being trained and learning different techniques, it's not going to make much of a difference. Just like if you spoke Chinese and I spoke English, and you talk to me really, really loud with lots of effort, I'm not going to get it any better. They get behind. They start to identify with antisocial groups. That's what the research shows us. Part of this last set of bullet points is we want to start to see this is the primary job of most of the children, young adult and adolescent children that come to us. Some young adults, they might be on a career track already. Or working on a trade. But for most people, academic schoolwork is their job. And we want to pay attention to things like work ethic and frustration tolerance and delay of gratification. One of the happiest things that I see when parents come out to the field is when they see their child not be successful with a certain task, but not give up. And parents notice that. And so we start to pay attention to different things. We start to pay attention to the resistance that they have due to authority and family, right? If my parents are so focused on academics, one of the ways to rebel, one of the ways to get back my power in that relationship is to rebel or resist against that. I'm going to define myself, says the adolescent or young adult, by first defining what I am not. And what I am not is I'm not my parents. And so whatever their values are, I'm going to go the opposite direction. It is how you know sometimes there is a problem, but I've seen that go too far. I've seen people that are severely addicted to drugs, even selling drugs. I've seen children that are struggling incredibly in their relationships with family and with friends. I've seen severely anxious clients. All of those that I just described having really good grades and parents waiting too long for that. So sometimes our over-focus, over-emphasis on academics blinds us to other problems. And then what happens is we start to make treatment decisions based on an academic paradigm, an academic goal, instead of an emotional, psychological goal. And that could become a problem. That's why our program for adolescents tends to be a lot larger in the summertime. Because in some cases, parents are unwilling to pull their children out of school, even when those children are struggling, because they're so afraid of getting off track, getting away from the norm. So part of this webinar, really the energy of this webinar, the discussion of this webinar, for parents is to hear, we want to value it. We want to see how it's a part of the clinical picture, and we don't want it to blind us. We don't want to lose focus. We don't want it to be our only goal and our only bit of information and the only way we measure success. I love that scene in the restaurant between Robin Williams and the other actor where they're talking about, in Good Will Hunting, where they were talking about academics, and Robert Redford gave a couple of descriptions of certain people. And one was a very talented academician, and he ended up being the Unabomber. And then he gave another example of somebody else. And so sometimes our overemphasis of academics blinds us to the problems that we see with our children. We developed an integrated curriculum where they do work on science, physical education, English, and psychology. And there are assignments to work on at any age. There are credits they can get for high school and credits they can get for college. You can talk to your therapist or parent coordinator about that. It's not going to be a complete makeup. They're not going to make up or maintain the same pace that they would maintain if they were in full-time school. But we give them a taste and we give an opportunity to observe what's going on, how they're responding to curriculum academics. Even we start to get a sense of learning differences that haven't been shown, that haven't shown up if they haven't had testing yet. And I should say that one of the reasons why we want many of our clients to get testing is because there are some learning differences that won't show up in the therapist's office and that the client may not even be aware of. So we want an integrated curriculum. We want an experience. We want to mimic the classroom experience. We want times where we want to see how well they can focus, right? How well they can stay on task and work towards a goal. So those kind of executive functioning issues that can show up, we want some of that out there. When we give grades and credits like I just described. And report the academic progress, and participation as we go along. This is what they're doing with their schoolwork, with their reading, with their writing assignments. You'll see some of those assignments, and some of those you'll just see in the report. You can ask your therapist about their academic work. It helps us to understand, explain, and treat the issues related to school performance and school struggles, and even behavioral or emotional problems. And it brings balance, right? One oversimplified way to describe mental health problems and addiction problems is imbalance. And so if we remove that too much from the equation, 100% from the equation, we don't work on that balance. And I think it doesn't generalize as well to after EVOC, because after EVOC, in almost all cases, there's going to be some academic work that the child or young adult is going to be going back into. We believe that all clients and students that are on that academic track, we want to help them build a foundation, both with the work ethic and the skills they need, to develop a goal to work toward graduation of something. Oftentimes, going back to the same school right after Wilderness is not recommended. And I'll say this as clear as I can. That is because of our experience, not because of a theoretical orientation that we have, but because of our experience. And why I'm so clear on that point is it's because of what we've seen. We've been around for more than 20 years doing wilderness therapy. And so we want to take that experience and say, this is what we see. It doesn't work. There are triggers. There are old relationships and expectations within that relationship. There are old identities in that old context. And AA and NA, they talk about changing your playground and your playmates. It doesn't solve the problem, but it can assist in the problem, right? And the willingness of the child to move on and try something different, where the expectations are different, where people don't know the way they were, they didn't fit into that role in that peer group, their willingness, openness to doing that is evidence of buying into this model of growth and growing up and maturing in the process. Good academics should push them as hard as therapy, right? That should be challenging for them. They should be asked to do difficult things like I've been saying so far. We wanted to good academics are going to allow them to express themselves, to challenge them, and to learn to communicate and feel. Like I said, there are bigger issues around education, and there's an incredibly strong connection to education, academics, and what comes up for us clinically. And like I said, I believe that for the world in general, but I know it from the population that we've worked with. Academic problems and challenges are how you know there is a problem, yet it doesn't mean it is the problem. Drugs, of course, can affect academic performance and attendance. Social problems and the self-esteem can both be the result of and the cause of, and both. It can be kind of a cycle of academic troubles, problems with authority, right? There's so many clients that we get that are so incredibly gifted and bright and intelligent and don't have learning differences, and yet they're struggling in school. And it has nothing to do with academics. And that's part of the question that we want to ask ourselves when we're working with a child is, where do they fit in these groups that I'm describing? Obviously, anxiety and depression, a lot of socially anxious kids are struggling with school attendance. A lot of them don't want to be put on the spot in a classroom. A lot of them are struggling socially to the point that they're victims of being bullied, or they're just terrified in general of interacting with their peers. So that can affect attendance. The peer influence, like I said, the research shows us that children with academic difficulties and learning differences tend to identify with antisocial groups more in school. And so it's going to be more important for them to fit in than it is for them to be successful and to stand out academically in that way. And then the low delay of gratification and frustration tolerance are all a part of this dynamic. I've described a little bit about how we use academics in the field. We use it as one reference point, one challenge. We definitely use a lot of reading and writing as an important part of the clinical learning that goes on for us. For I was going to say young people, but people relate to stories. We ask all students to read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning and The Anatomy of Peace. Those are two books. Then there's a whole host of other books that you can look at by going to the parent portal, or that's this last slide that I'll show you. You can look at other books that are recommended and used in the field. We want to see, like I said, we want to ask and be asked and answer the question of how academics fits into the overall clinical picture. We want to see the push and pull, right? The resistance, the behavioral problems that come up in and around academics. I had a parent one time come out to the field and they left without their child. They had planned to take their child with them, but they left without them because he had not finished their academics, his academics. And we'd been talking about it week after week. Had been a focus in therapy and with the staff. And he procrastinated just like at home. And it was a painful and difficult experience. And they left without him. He finished it within a couple of days. That's how close he was. But he showed them, this is the line. You know, we're going to hold this. This is a part of overall health. Just like hygiene is a part of therapy, right? Everything out there becomes a part of therapy, becomes at least symbolically, if not literally, tied to how we're doing overall on our mental health. It's a way of operationalizing change. So when we see people develop that passion for learning or that capacity to study and not be distracted or not get stuck in the power struggle, we see that as one piece of evidence of their change. Like I said, everything becomes grist for the clinical mill. It becomes a part, our observations in and around academics and testing can inform your consultant and professionals that are working with you afterwards about where they fit, what's a good fit for them. It also can, as we work with them, can help us see what issues come in and around academics. If there was a thesis of this webinar, it might be that we put first things first, right? And oftentimes, academics are not first on the list by the time a family to send a child to us. I can't say that more plainly and more simply than it's not the most important thing right now. It will take care of itself. It will take care of itself when they get healthy, when they get back on track. And so sometimes it's parents learning to let go of certain constructs in our society about how old you're supposed to be when you graduate high school or college, right? I use myself as an example, and not everybody is like me, but my story around academics fits into this idea that I'm talking about, which is I dropped out of high school when I was 16, had all kinds of problems with family, with authority, with drugs. And later on, a couple of years later, I went back to school, got my degree, started college when I was 21, and then I got straight A's for 8 years. And it wasn't effortless. But like a lot of our clients, that will come when it comes. And yeah, I didn't start college until I was 21. I graduated later than my peers. But once I got everything together, then academics were doable. And so sometimes it's our shame. Sometimes it's comparing ourselves to the people next door, you know, all those kinds of questions that so many of you tell me when your peers and friends ask you, you know, how's Johnny, how's Susie? And they're talking about their child being away at college or university. And then you have to talk about an answer, if you're going to be honest and open with them, about where your child is, that he or she is not on that traditional track right now, that we're reprioritizing things. In my world, like I always talk about, there's no shame in that, right? I find that the children that go through our program have our problems, the problems that our children have at Evoke, and then get themselves together. I found out that emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, they're much farther ahead of people that followed that traditional, normal, quote unquote, track of academic progress. So, and in fact, I tell the story that when I applied to college, I got some help from somebody who was an advocate for me, but I applied to college and I wrote my story, my adolescence and dropping out of high school. And I got a call from the registrar's office, from the dean. She said to me, we didn't let you in spite of your story. We let you in partly because of your story, because it explained your transcript, which was a mess. And it explained what you learned from those experiences. And of course, like I said, I was immediately successful. They let me in on probation and I was immediately successful all the way through all 8 years of my graduate work included. Academics can inspire you, challenge you. I talked about that. Sometimes in programs, there are a lot of programs out there that your consultant can talk to you about where the academics that were going on in their high school weren't challenging enough, weren't inspiring enough. And so sometimes a more challenging setting can actually be a boost to them clinically. Sometimes if they have a lot of anxiety around it, a lot of performance around it, issues around it, sometimes it can be a deterrent because their capacity isn't enough to handle it right now. So that all begins to fit into the picture. We have those discussions. Sometimes therapy in aftercare programs is adjunct, right? It's after therapy. It's a side note. Sometimes it's very well integrated. Sometimes it looks a lot more mainstream. So all of those different variations are included in the kinds of schools and programs for young adults and adolescents that you can talk to your consultant about. We have the same goal that parents have, but we're going to take what might look like an indirect route at times when it comes to academics. Those are going to take a second or a third tier priority, because mental health or sobriety or some specific element in their life is going to be more important right now for that. And then when that gets put back together, they'll be okay. I'm reminded of this story. It's a little bit of a detour, but I keep thinking about it, so I'm just going to tell it. It's an old commercial from the 1980s, I think, where a father's reading the newspaper and his son comes up to him, continues to ask him if he'll play. And so the father decides he's going to give him a task. He takes a piece of the paper, rips it out, and there's a picture of the world, all the countries of the world, and he rips it up into pieces. And he says to his son, go put this puzzle together, and when you're done, then we'll play. But I want to read a little bit, and you can work on this puzzle. And his son came back in a few minutes, and he said, how did you do that? He said, you see that on the other side of the page of the map, there was a picture of a family. And once I put the family back together, the whole world fit into place. And so while that doesn't talk about academics, it talks about the idea that is true of almost all of our clients, almost universally, that once they get themselves together, academics will work. School, job, all of that will work. It will be the evidence of the change, of the growth, of the psychological health. It's like focusing on the symptom. We talk about this all the time in a book. If you just talk about symptom reduction, right? Whatever the symptom is, if you just treat the symptoms, you don't treat the root of it. It's like cutting the weed off at the surface. All of us know that wouldn't work because the root is still there. So that's what I mean when I talk about we have the same goal, but there's going to be a moment where many of us therapists are going to ask you to pause that right now, to put that on the list, but lower on the list than some of these important things. And following or lining up with mainstream society and the construct in our society about certain time frames and the way that it's supposed to go is contrived. It really is. And it takes a lot of work. I know what it feels like to have children that aren't on track. And I'll talk about that in a second. And I know what that's like for me as an adult talking to neighbors and friends. And it can be challenging, but that's my work. That's where I need to expand, right? And if we're honest with ourselves, sometimes we can work through that with the help of a therapist or mentor or sponsor or somebody. We can help ourselves with that process. That idea of on track, by the way, I've said a lot about that, but I want to just repeat something that I often say. Parents often use the phrase, I want to get back on track. One of the things I invite parents to consider is that you're not off track, right? That this is not a detour. There's a concept called radical acceptance where you accept where you're at, and then you can learn all the lessons that come along with it. But if you're trying to get back to some prescribed path, then you're going to miss the lessons and the gifts that this path has to offer. And so those of you tonight who are tuning into this webinar, I say this all the time when I run parent groups, I'm less worried about you than I am worried about many parents who never end up at a program like Evoke because their children never need it. Their process does not ask them the same kinds of difficult and tough questions that this process asks you. Simple things like listening, knowing what you're feeling, being aware of messages and communication, learning to own your own anxiety, learning not to use guilt and shame, on and on and on, all the things that we talk about in our parenting curriculum. Their process doesn't ask that of them, doesn't ask them to look at that and improve that, and yours does. I see you as having the advantage over them in many, many ways. I tell this story about a mother who was talking about this, about missing out. She was describing this football game where someone's on the football team, and she ended her story by saying, I felt sorry for all the other parents at the football game. She went to a football game while her son was with us because they weren't having some of the same discussions that I was having with my son. And she'd flipped in her head from this being something that was a bad thing to something that was an opportunity. So reprioritizing, that's essentially the thesis of this webinar tonight. Defining success. What is success? I use that phrase sometimes. I love it. And parents often interrupt me when I use that word in a sentence. They say, by whose definition, right? What measure? Because there's academic success, there's financial success, there's relationships with success, there's physical health success, right? There's a numberless amount of areas that we could measure our success in. And part of what we're asking parents is to, like I say, shuffle, reprioritize, put them in a kind of a different order. Fix the mind and the head will follow. Let go of the timeline, expectations, and norms. That's what I've been talking about. This process prepares children, young adult and adolescent children, to catch up. And sometimes that's through independent study, but almost all of the programs that come after Evoke, if that's your choice, almost all of those have transcript recovery as a part of their process, right? Improving and making it up and cleaning it up. And I'm not sure traditional or mainstream approaches are the best for every child, right? I've told this story. It's been a while, but again, I think there's other issues involved in tonight's webinar besides just academics. I remember father telling me that when he was a kid growing up in a small town in Texas, that he would get out of school and they would kind of wander through his little town. And by the time it was supper time, by the time it was dinner time, he would get home to his mother. And his mother knew where he had been all day and who he had been with because they were all talking to each other, right? It was the village concept, raising the children. We don't have that today. I still think about this, that if we were designing a context for people ages 13 to 20, let's just say, some of the most vulnerable parts of growth, 13 to 25 would include the entire length of the adolescent brain, I'm not sure that we would have schools that have 1,000 people, classroom sizes of 30-to-1 ratios. I wouldn't design it that way if I were designing it from scratch. That would not be the ideal. The ideals, in many cases, would be the kind of stuff that we do at Evoke, the kind of the stuff that they do at a lot of these therapeutic schools and programs afterwards. Those are much better environments. I was talking to a high school student who's an exchange student just this weekend. A friend of mine has a 15-year-old from Spain, and she was talking about the public school, a nice public school in our area. And she was talking about how incredible it was for her to watch the culture and the way that the students looked at their education, their behavior in classroom, their behavior, you know, around lunch, things like that. She was talking about she couldn't believe how different it was and much lower, of course, than what she was used to in terms of quality. So I'm not sure the traditional mainstream approaches, although we're attached to them, I'm not sure that they have all that value that we think they do. In these other schools and programs, the milieu is an important part of it, and the tolerance, right? There's enough adult attention, there's enough therapeutic support that it's not pass or fail, you're kicked out. There's a process. And in many ways, that's what our children, the children that come to our program, they're asking for. A more complex process than pass or fail. Looking at the anxiety and the capacity to deal with it, letting go of your stigmas. I think there's nothing probably more challenging than just that last bullet point. We have stigmas. If your children went to Harvard or Stanford, right? How much easier would it be for you socially to talk about what your child was doing and how they were doing? Instead of talking about they're at Evoke or they're somewhere else. I'm not talking about announcing it to the world, which I do, but that's not normal for most people. I'm talking about talking to even your relatively close circle of friends, how challenging that can be. We have stigmas. We have judgments. And again, I don't want to go too far astray, but I think this process that our children are engaging us in, I think it's asking us to let go of some of those. That's that idea that Joseph Campbell and Gandhi talk about, where they talk about relationships. They expand us. They transform us, right? But there's a transformation that goes on in this process when we engage it. That's the wrong take-home slide, so I apologize. Oh, no. Yeah, it was. That was the old one. So that's kind of where I wanted to talk about tonight, is just getting to a place to talk to you about this idea of we have the same goal. We want to get there. There's some change that we can go through. We can begin to redefine success. We can embrace this journey, right? And we can get back to not the old track, not back on that track, but a different track, a better track. And that's hopefully what we can do in this process. So happy to take any questions or comments from any parents. I have some announcement slides I can go through. Our son was given the curriculum to do academic work, but he chose not to do any of it. It was explained to us that he had a choice. Is there a reason it was important to not force that be done? He was not defiant about it, but I think it was a requirement. Isn't that like creating a brownie for them to abide by? I don't know specifically with your child. I made it a part of advancement in our program. They didn't have to complete it to graduate from the program. But even when children were resistant to it, that told me, in some ways, it informed me and hopefully the parents about what kind of setting they would need afterwards. One that was had more structure around it, right? One that might have had some accommodations, I'm not sure. So I'm not sure what it was, why your therapist made that choice at Evoke, but part of what I'm inviting you to do, make that a part of your questions with the Evoke therapist. Ask them their intention about not talking about it or about talking about it or about what they require. Ask them what they're thinking about it. A lot of times in our curriculum, in our parent portal, when we rewrote it a couple of years ago, and even on these webinars, I do this all the time. I get funny emails from the therapist all the time telling me that, hey, Brad told us to ask this or Brad told us to ask that. I want you to ask questions of them to find their intention, to challenge them. I think any good therapist will be open to those kinds of discussions and questions. And listen for information. Even ask the question, am I putting too much emphasis on it? Am I in a power struggle with my child, right? You can have those kinds of discussions with your therapist too. One of the most common paradigm shifts that we ask parents to make is that they're putting it too high on the priority list when it needs to be second or third below mental health or addiction issues, right? So have that part of the discussion too. So I'm not sure. We're definitely not in the business of forcing, but I've had children that are defined on a number of different continuums. And part of what I say to the staff is I'm not going to, you know, intimidate him or her or get them to do it, but it's going to inform me and the parents about how long they're here and about where they go next and what kind of structure, what kind of intervention they need next. And I'll tell that to the client too. What suggestion do you have for helping a kid let go of the stigma of and accept being off track? I think that's a great question. My answer to that question would be for you to do it first and foremost in your own life with regard to these issues and other issues in your life, right? That's almost always true of most of these kinds of questions. The best way for you to help them with their shame is to own your shame, talk about it, maybe even name it, even talk about it if it's a struggle, even if you're not there, right? And you don't have to be specific with all of your issues, but you can talk about it in general. It's much more powerful and valuable for a parent to admit to a child, I still struggle with peer pressure sometimes. It's much more valuable for them to say that than for them to give their child a lecture on peer pressure. It's infinitely more helpful. So if you can start to look at your own therapy, you know, have you walked into an Al-Anon meeting? Have you walked into a CODA meeting? Have you told your friends that you're doing some of this work? So that will eventually kind of fill up the culture in your family when you do this. I've talked about this with you all on webinars before with my children. All of my children, all the ages, have been to therapy. Three of them are in therapy right now, three out of the four. The fourth, the youngest one, the eight-year-old, she feels left out. So she's asked a few times, and we've had her in therapy, play therapy a couple of other times. And they know that mom and dad go to therapy every week. They know our therapist's name. They know when we go. They've been to see her. I think all of them have been to see her at least once, too. So it's changing. We have a culture in our family where therapy is not an off. Not going to therapy is an evidence of something. Actually, that's a problem in our family. There's a problem if you're not going to therapy. You're not looking at yourself. You're not challenging yourself. You're not working on yourself. You say we need to redefine success. Do teens at Evoke learn that as well? Encourage you this? Absolutely. All of this gets talked about in terms of shame. All of this gets talked about in terms of stigma. And it takes a while for them to get there. But it is, folks, I've done webinars on shame. They're in the library. If you haven't watched them and you're interested in it, it is a core piece of all treatment everywhere. I just wrote a piece last week for some website where I talked about how this new discussion that the Surgeon General and the President are having around talking about addiction as a disease instead of a moral failing, and how not only is that important in terms of what it contributes to policy change in our country, but it's important, and I said this in the article, because almost all addiction is related to shame. Almost all the issues that we have that we talk about at Evoke with your children and with you guys touch on shame. So absolutely beginning to redefine success and look at it. And we're, you know, sometimes, this is an interesting idea. I'll relate it to eating disorders, because sometimes if we talk about symptoms, the symptoms have won. If you talk about weight with somebody with an eating disorder, the symptom has won because it is distracting you from talking about feelings. So does it make sense? If I'm talking about alcohol abuse, if I'm talking about how much you weigh or whether you're throwing up, if I talk about you yelling and being disrespectful, then I'm not talking about feeling insecure and afraid and sad and trauma and grief. The purpose of a symptom is to move us away from our feelings. And if that happens both to the individual and in dialogue with us adults, with the clients and children that we're working with, then it wins. It's serving its purpose. It's serving its purpose. So it's important that we not get distracted by the symptoms. And I would put academic success as one of those symptoms. It's a part of the discussion. Like a lot of things, it informs us. It becomes part of our equation in our adult mind, but we don't let it. We don't let it become our whole focus. All right, upcoming events. We have the play opening in New York on the opening night gala is on the 26th. You can go to OnGuardArts.org. This is a play about wellness therapy opening in New York. The following year, it's going to be touring the country. So it might be to your city, but the opening night gala, if you want to go to New York, have a fun time with your family. We're going to have a breakfast the following morning with about 10 or 12 Evoke people and whatever families are present. So RSVP, let us know. Love to have you. Love to have breakfast with you the next day. We would like all parents to attend the workshops. Those are on the left side of your screen. You can schedule those in conjunction with a mid-program visit if it's at the site that your child is at, or you can just do it in the middle. They're very valuable. 10 to 25 parents, experiential, psychoeducation, wonderful stuff. On the right side are our intensives that I run. This is 6 people if they're the Finding You, and up to 10 if they're the Multifamily Heroic Journeys one. That's for families. This is if you want to do really deep work, right? This is deep therapy work, family of origin stuff, talking about shame. We do a lot around shame, do a lot around looking at your inner child, your own wounds, both as parents and children, learning and practicing real-time communication. So that's the right side. Those are opportunities to go to if you want to. On the left side, we'd like every family to do it. On the right side, if you want to get into your work a little bit more, then come to those. And you have the email addresses there. if you have more questions. We still have a spot left for the Finding You on September 11th through 14th if anybody's interested. 12-step support. We would like all families to go to 6 of these while their children are with us. If you haven't done it, start now. Don't wait for your aftercare planning, your aftercare activities to start toward the end. Start now. Start as soon as you possibly can after entering the program. Here are the upcoming New York City, Los Angeles, and Bay Area parent support groups. Notice the Los Angeles one is at a different time. We also have a potluck, and it's going to help you with traffic because we've had a lot of difficulty with the traffic in Los Angeles. So those are the upcoming ones in LA, Bay Area, New York City. Email Stephanie at evoketherapy.com to RSVP or for more information. If you're on social media, please follow us here. That can help you get some of the announcements, some of the inspirational quotes and ideas. We just posted another blog today. This week is Suicide Prevention Week, and I just wrote a blog about it. Got posted today on our Evoke Therapy. So those get posted there, and then it takes you to our blog. Here's our adventure trips. These are fun trips for young adults or families. These are therapy light. You can actually have a therapist come out there, but most of it is just good, fun leadership communication. The book is available on paperback and also audio. Go to the Parent Alumni Foundation book page. There's the link there. That will show you dozens and dozens of our recommended books for parents and your children. And part of the proceeds goes to the Amazon Smile campaign, which goes to our charity to help people who can't afford treatment. All right, I don't know if there's any questions before I close, but the next webinar is going to be 2 nights from now on the 8th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. It's going to be 12 steps for everybody. So it's not just for addicts, but it's for everybody. I'm going to teach really what's at the core of each of the 12 steps and how they can apply to everybody, even if you don't have an addiction. And for those of you who have an addict in your life, you'll be able to kind of see how it fits and that resistance that people have to, I'll address that resistance that many people have with the 12 step. All right, Michael lets me know that that's all the questions for this evening. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your questions and participation. Hope this was a helpful point of contact with you, for you. And I'll talk to you Thursday night at 7. Take care. Bye-bye.
Better you'll be. Better.